On this episode of The Playbook, I have Greg Smith, co-founder and CEO of Thinktific, and we're going to talk about how you can put empathy first and economics second. Join me for all this and more on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook, and I have Greg Smith. He is the CEO of Thinkific, and they're actually a platform that I use for my executive coaching program. I have fallen in love with them, highly recommended some of my friends through LinkedIn, the incredible Ryan Serhant, just amazing, amazing company. And then I find out that the CEO is a recovering lawyer like me. So I had to have him on to figure out the playbook to success of a recovering lawyer, how you build such a great company. Greg Smith, welcome to The Playbook.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it. Awesome to be here.
Well, you know, I'm always intrigued by people that not necessarily, I don't call it pivot. I call it permission, right? Yeah, because we have to forgive ourselves when we don't do what our parents want or what people expect us to do. We got to give ourselves permission to change directions. And, you know, the law profession itself is so interesting because some of the greatest entrepreneurs, business people, they have law degrees. And I was wondering if you could share with us, because a lot of people ask me, I'm going to be a sports agent. Should I go to law school? I'm going to do this. Should I go to law school? What things did you take out of going to law school that you're applying today in your business?
So much. It's interesting in that I think I could have done a lot of it without going, but at the same time, there's been huge value in doing it. I think one thing was just a lot of risk analysis of you know, looking at what could happen in the future. But a big one is just relationships and coming at them with the perspective of like, let's make everything a win-win. And so at its core, and maybe not all lawyers see it this way, but I just see any contract negotiation, any deal, any partnership where usually you're putting legal terms in, really it comes down to like lots of different things are going to come in the future. Let's set this up in a way where we both win and we've kind of really tried to anticipate as much as we can and we're really agreed and aligned that we're going to work and make this happen together.
It's so interesting you say that because I found, you know, from my law experience, and I worked for West, so I met more lawyers for the first 5 years of my career with Westlaw than probably anyone. But like any profession, it's the lens in which you see it. You, for example, have this abundant type of perspective of, you know, I see the law as a win-win, where I know a lot of lawyers that I met have a scarce perspective of things, that there has to be a winner and a loser in everything. And I know that Thinkific, because I use it, has this abundant kind of open attitude that really pervades it. And I can see that one of the things that's interesting about law school that I found is so much case law is like studying history. And my mom always told me study history because the best thing that you can learn is human nature. And I find when you talked about the relationship intertwined with the abundant perspective that, you know, that is truly why you're successful in, you know, you have another company, Alpha Seminars, which is like the Barbary of Canada, I think, if I get it right. But, you know, it is an interesting thing to find that human nature and be able to, not leverage or manipulate, but more importantly, serve human nature and know that, hey, this is how I can create this abundance. How important is that perspective in your business today?
I think it's been pretty pivotal in our success and the success of our customers. So one example I just found about it recently is there's someone on our platform who did $12 million in course sales last year, and they're paying us, I think, $99 a month. So obviously, if I had the sort of scarcity approach with that one customer, I'd be like, okay, how do we charge them way more? How did we set it up from the beginning so that we should have captured way more of that? The reality is I just look at it as a great story to tell. Here's someone who's making a fortune. Like, we're still happy getting $99 a month. And I just want to create more people like that who are doing and not just making money, but he's able to get out there and build a team, build a business, and help thousands of people around the world taking their courses. So I think taking that approach has allowed us to capture a bigger market share, reach more people, create more success, and not worry about, did I get mine in this specific scenario all the time? So,
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I have thousands and thousands of people at my free training that I use Thinkific for. So on the other end, we're averaging it out for you, and I'm happy to pay for the platform because it's so exceptional and makes my life not only easy, but the customers or the clients that I have. I'm on a mission to empower over 1 billion people to be happy, and Thinkific is going to be a crucial component of that. I call it my platform of happiness. Now, awesome. I also, you know, to transcode, as lawyers always said, the biggest scam of being a lawyer was legalese. I felt like it was like Spanish, you know, or technology, probably even more like technology. It's like, okay, so you took all these simple concepts in the law and then you came up with all these legalese, these special terms. That's what they do in technology too. And when you get to the core of understanding the concept, you're like, hey, this is easy. Why'd you call it, you know, riparian rights? You know, that's you confuse me. But you have an interesting mission with your company, not just your personal mission. Can you share with me how you came up with the mission statement that you guys have?
Well, really, everything we do is around creating successful course creators, right? And so I think the idea there is that that is deeply what we're passionate about. In fact, if you distill it down, sort of the why behind the why behind the why is I just love helping people. And so if I go to a party and I meet someone and they say, oh, I'm trying to do this thing and I know someone who could help them, I can't help but introduce them or try and give advice. Sometimes I might go too far in giving advice, like, oh, I know how to do that. Let me tell you about this person, make this introduction. They're like, whoa, I'm not ready to go yet. But I absolutely love helping people. And so for us, the people we try and help the most and the ones I love to help the most is the entrepreneur, because I really believe that they're the ones who can make the biggest difference in the world, and especially when they're teaching other people. So everything we do is about helping other entrepreneurs who have some special skill, knowledge, passion, something they're good at, they want to share with the world. Because when they do that, we get to change their life because they get to build a business, which, you know, buys a house, lets them travel, lets them raise their kids the way they want. But it also changes thousands of other lives because they get to go share that special part of them with the rest of the world. So that's just fundamentally what we love doing. And it's just so passionate and exciting to hear the stories when people go out and do that.
And I think externally, you're really making a huge impact, but also internally, right? You know, one of the things that I always say is you have to take care of your own employees, your associates, your executives, your management, as if they're my first clients, you know. And I think a lot of executives don't do that, but kind of studying the way that you have effective hiring patterns and other things that you believe in, what are some of the keys in taking care of, one, the people that you have, and two, recruiting the effective people you need?
Yeah, everything for me comes back to empathy. So it's interesting because I think sometimes as CEOs or founders or even hiring managers, we look at things as to, you know, economics first and people second. I see that as it's the other way around. It's always empathy first. So we've done things like we had someone who couldn't work and their benefits wouldn't cover it. The, you know, long-term disability, short-term disability wouldn't cover it. So we kept them on payroll for over a year. Well, they couldn't do any work for us and just said, we're just going to keep paying you till you can find something else or you want to come back. We've done things, you know, and that's just, you know, one of many. In terms of how that impacts our hiring or how we look at that, we really, in every interaction in hiring, it comes back to empathy and what can we do to help. And that translates for us to having a more diverse workforce. We're over 50% women. And super diverse on all sorts of metrics of race and religion and other areas. And I think that, you know, one way to look at that is it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Another way to look at it is I think it actually positively impacts the bottom line because you get diverse perspectives sitting in a brainstorming or planning what the next thing we're going to build is or how we're going to help this customer. And people come with ideas I never would have thought of because they come with a totally different background or a totally different set of beliefs. And suddenly their idea is clearly the best one at the table and they're educating all the rest of us. So for me, it all starts with empathy. And then it's just about creating an environment where people feel super safe to be themselves and do what they do. And then magic happens when they feel safe and they feel welcomed and they feel like they're there to be themselves, then they get to be themselves and deliver real value.
So interesting because you take such a teacher-student approach to the internal organization that you have, but also both the businesses from Thinkific to the office seminars that you have. It's looking at, but yet, you know, there's certain metrics that you look like look at and feel are important, like diversity and other dynamic metrics. But I was also looking at your ideas about metrics in, you know, completing courses, for example, that we shouldn't be tied in. And I'm really trying to study your philosophies to be successful, because I find that your platform will be one of the catalysts for my mission in life of empowering 1,000 people to empower 1,000 people to be happy. And I'm using Thinkific as my platform to do that. You know, how important are metrics when it comes to the completion of courses or other metrics that you think? I always say, you know, statistics, the only statistics I used to know that was true was 99% of all statistics are made up. so I've never been a big metrics guy, but what's your opinion about that kind of student to completion rate method or other metrics that exist?
Yeah, it's, I mean, completion rate, I think, is one thing to look at, but it's not the end all be all. The one I look a little more closely at is how many of your students are achieving the goal they set out to achieve when they signed up with you, or how much are they getting closer to it? So a good example is one of the first online courses I ever signed up was with lynda.com. And I had shot a bunch of video at my niece's birthday party, and I wanted to edit the video into a beautiful video that I could share with my family and hopefully cause a few people to cry with joy. That was the clear goal.
I'm a sucker for that. No problem.
Yeah. And, you know, and it was her first or second birthday, and I was new to filming and editing. So I went on, I took this course, and I completed 30% of it. So in their metrics department, I'm probably a failure, right? I only completed 30%. But in that 30%, I got everything I needed to go edit the video. I edited this beautiful video. I shared it with my sister-in-law. Everybody cried, laughed, thought it was really fun. Goal achieved. Perfect success. I am a returning customer. I am a recommending customer. I'm at a 10 out of 10 on your NPS, Net Promoter Score. So I'm stoked about the whole thing. So from a metrics perspective, I think we got to be careful it's good to track completion. It gives you one metric. It's good to track NPS or Net Promoter Score. But the one I really watch is, have we helped them achieve what their dream was, what they set out to achieve? So I often just ask people when they start, what are you hoping to achieve from this, scale of 1 to 10? And then partway through and at the end, what back to that thing you were hoping to achieve, scale of 1 to 10, how close are you to achieving it? And even if you can just get them from a 2 to a 3 or a 4 to a 6, they're moving towards it. I mean, if their dream is to become completely financially independent and you get them from a 4 to a 6, that could be a massive change in someone's life. It doesn't always have to be, okay, tick, I'm done, I'm totally financially independent.
You know, you're so resilient in what you're doing. And then today we have such compressed uncertainty, acceleration of change. What's some advice that you could give entrepreneurs today, since we're in a unique time? We were talking about both of us being kind of toptimists, the top of the optimists. Yeah. And I'm like, heck of a year to be a toptimist, 2020, but I'm also extremely resilient, and I have found the light, the love, and the lessons, the profit, the margins of millionaires by smiling through struggle. What are some of the key tips that you can give to people to be resilient, to give yourself permission to pivot, and other things that you may use to stay on top? Because you guys are growing and doing a tremendous job during a very, you know, tough time.
Yeah, I think part of it is asking yourself that why you're doing what you're doing. So if what you were doing before all the changes in the world right now is fundamentally not working anymore, then really go down deeper into why are you doing it and what are the results you want to create? What are you passionate about? And I would try and keep your pivot kind of within that area of, let's stick with something I'm still super passionate about, but find a way to change it a bit so that it works now. If it's still working now, then I'd say just keep doing it, do more of it. I think one of the opportunities we have right now with everyone stuck at home is just that ability to get out and serve and build an audience. So if you're newer to the game of entrepreneurship, the opportunity to build an audience right now is wild. I was talking to a lady down the street, and she was teaching music to kids, you know, in small groups, like 4 or 5 families together or 10 kids together at a community center. All of a sudden, that whole business is gone. But that's what she loves to do, music and kids. So she went online, and her first Facebook Live online, and this is someone with no technical expertise, never done social media marketing, has just always thought, oh, one day I should do something online. She hops on her first Facebook Live. She's got 300 people on it. And now she's building a course. She's giving it to the parents. They're teaching their kids music. And she's like, I went from being able to impact 5 or 10 families a week to now hundreds. All around the world. So she's still doing what she loves, but she's pivoted within that and is now being even more successful than ever before.
Yeah, I think it's most important today for people to know to find their frequency. You know, if your expertise is to open children's toys, who would ever think that you could reach millions of people that are interested in learning how to open children's toys, you know, or watch? But it's so true, right? And I learned that back in the 90s when, you know, I graduated work for Westlaw. And, you know, you're talking about 92 and people were like, is there any market, you know, selling legal research to lawyers, you know, like in, you know, 95 when we sold to Thompson closer to you for $3.4 billion, I learned a really valuable lesson. You know, you can have an extremely small niche business, even pre-chasm internet, and do extremely well. Now we have this extraordinary reach. And I agree with you, whether you're a small company, whether you're a mid-sized company or an individual who opens children's toys, you know, this is a perfect time to build your brand and find your frequency. Last question real quick. If I was going to ask you, you know, what is the frequency of your business? You know, what is that, you know, message, that true authentic brand that you're trying to portray or reach? What would you answer?
The true authentic brand that we're yeah, trying to,
you know, there's a frequency. Like for me, you know, my frequency is happiness, right? In the end, I want to make money, help people and have fun. And that's a, you know, enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential. Like my frequency is always about, can I make you feel good? Is your thermostat how you feel? And what do I do? Whether it's the TV shows, the podcast, anything, even the hospitality. And when I go back to the sports marketing side, which is completely dead right now. Right? There's not many big events going on. but even when I did that, it was about, you know, creating this unbelievable happy, like my own little mini Disneylands. That's kind of my frequency. Do you have or have thought about what your frequency may be?
Yeah, I love that. And the way you phrased it makes so much sense to me. I think for us at the core, it's really about, I call it success, but it's a specific definition of it, not the way I think a lot of us look at it, but it's really the achievement of dreams. And to me, dreams are, you know, not necessarily what you have when you go to bed at night, but if you have a vision of yourself at some point in the future and you're different or you're in a different place or you're experiencing something different or you're happier, how can we get you closer to that? And so for our customers, it's, you know, how do we get them closer to achieving their dreams for themselves for the future? And the really cool thing, like you and your a big, hairy, audacious goal of 1,000, helping 1,000 and 1 billion, is that right? Yeah,
thousand times 1,000 is a billion, 1 million times 1,000 is a billion.
Right. Okay. I'm counting on you. So like that. Yeah. So like your big goal, for every course creator that we help achieve their dreams, they get to go out and help thousands achieve their dreams by sharing their own special message with them. So really, I think it's for us, it's about helping people achieve their dreams. And that's everything we're building at Thinkific, is trying to help people do just that.
I think you're doing it too. And I really appreciate you got Greg Smith. He's empowering others to empower others to reach their dreams through an incredible platform, Thinkific. And I certainly appreciate your wisdom and experience that you're sharing with all these entrepreneurs and others here with Dave Meltzer on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.